Welcome to the Arts Entrepreneurship Podcast, making art work.
We highlight how entrepreneurs align their artistry, passion, and vision to create and pursue opportunities to capture value in the arts. The views expressed by guests on the Arts Entrepreneurship Podcast are solely their own and do not necessarily represent the views of the podcast or its hosts. The appearance of a guest on the podcast, the venture they represent, or reference to any product or service does not imply an endorsement or recommendation by the podcast or its hosts. The content provided is for entertainment and informational purposes only and does not constitute business advice. Here are your hosts, Andy Heiss and Nick Petrella.
Hi, Arts Entrepreneurship Podcast listeners. I'm Andy Heiss.
And I'm Nick Petrella. Gita Omri is joining us today. She's an Israeli-American fashion designer based in New York City who has made it her mission to focus on inclusive fashion design for women. After earning a degree in fashion design from the Art Institute of New York City, she attended the prestigious Central St. Martin's College at the University of Arts, London, and completed her education at the Academy of Art University of San Francisco. We'll have Gita's website in the show notes so you can read more about her and see her latest designs. Quick shout out to our friend Scott French from Very New York, who helped us arrange this interview. Thanks for being on the podcast, Gita.
Thank you for having me. This is really exciting.
Let's start by having you tell us why inclusive fashion is so important to you.
Well, I think in any category that requires inclusion, right, it sucks to be the one on the outside. And usually those are the ones that are the people who are on the outside are the ones fighting to get in. So as someone who's been plus size my entire life, it's been a battle to get in and say, you know, I love fashion. I love dressing up. I love putting myself together and feeling beautiful. And why is that not available to me? So that's a big driving force in creating clothes that are fashionable for all women.
Great.
And was that one of the driving factors behind why you went to school for fashion design, or has fashion always been sort of something that you've wanted to do in general?
I'm not one of those designers who, you know, oh, ever since I was a baby, I knew this was going to be, no, but I was a dress up queen. I was obsessed with dressing up. And I actually, my first love was musicals and musical theater. Uh-huh. And I thought that I would be a Broadway star, but I grew up in Israel, so that channel really wasn't available to me. And second, I didn't know there could be plus size or fat actresses, or so that was quickly not a path to take. But I always loved clothes. I always loved dressing up. From the majority of my youth, I really had to focus on accessories because there really wasn't fashion available. So when I was in my military service, actually, mm-hmm. I decided to take at the end of the service, when your time kind of opens up a bit, because I'm training the person to replace me, I said, you know what? I don't like free time. Let me take a course. So I took a styling course, and I quickly realized that that wasn't enough for me. Mm-hmm. Styling it's fun and it's a great career path, but I'm a creator. I really wanted to see my vision from sketch to model. And mm-hmm. That's really kind of when I decided to pursue fashion design.
And so styling would just be taking existing accessories and clothing and putting them together for a client or something versus designing where you're actually drawing it out. And
yeah. I think that simplifies it a little bit, but because there is more I used to be in your mindset of, oh, styling is just like, just put stuff together. But I actually, throughout time, in this industry, I've realized that there's so much more to it. And, styling though is another way of being creative. It's more about curation rather than creation.
Yeah. Got it.
And do you do that with your brand, or is purely design?
So up until this season, I did all the styling, and this season, this show was the the biggest production we've done. And so I brought on a stylist. Her name is Yael Goldman, and she actually did a really great job. And this last collection, working with her, really made me appreciate stylists and what it is that they actually bring to the table, because it's a big part of it. Yeah.
Yeah. So did you jump right into owning a brand, or did you work at other brands before launching?
I did not work for other brands. I you know, dabbled here and there when I was really hungry, but mostly when I went to school, I knew I wanted to do my own thing. Mm-hmm. I wanted to create something that wasn't there. You know, when I started school, I was practically told, like, you can do plus size fashion or you can do luxury fashion, but there is not a meeting of the two. And I thought, well, that's ridiculous. I want to do luxury and not just plus size. I don't want to be pigeonholed as a plus size designer. I want to be a women's wear designer. So I kind of knew right away that I was going to do my own thing. I also am not great with being told what to do. So I figured that would be the best path for me. But
spoken like an entrepreneur.
Oh, yes. but it was really, really difficult for a very long time, because I didn't know what I was doing. And I would have benefited, I think, so much from learning, from going to another company and learning for a few years. You know, and my grandfather, who's in finance and business and has been his whole career, he was always like, well, maybe you should get a job. Maybe you should go and learn from someone else. And I was like, oh, I'll figure it out, you know. And 10 years in, I'm still figuring it out. So yeah.
Now, is that uncommon? It seems like we've had different fashion designers and merchandisers on the podcast, and it seems like their path was to work with someone else. So is it uncommon what you're doing?
I think that it is. Yes and no. Mm-hmm. It's uncommon in the fact that, you know, it boils down to privilege, right? Those of us who can afford to just say, whatever, I'm doing my own thing.
Right.
We can. And there's a lot of big designers who started out that way as well. They're just like, oh, I have money. I'm going to put money in and I'm going to do it. But for the majority of creatives, designers, artists, they're not starting out with money. And so you do have to work to subsidize your creativity. I'm really fortunate that I came from a family that has been very supportive, both emotionally and financially, to my goals and my dreams. And so in that way, I got a leg up and I'm very privileged.
That's great.
And what have been some challenges and rewards of launching your own label?
Ooh, challenges. I don't know if this podcast is long enough, but first of all, it's again, the learning curve is just insane. I've made so many mistakes, many of which were very expensive mistakes. Mm. And you don't really have a mentor or a guide or something. You know, I've tried to pick those up along the way, and, mm-hmm. and I've done the work. You know, I don't want to sound like, oh, I just came in, I have all this money and I'm doing, like, sure, I've worked really hard to kind of figure it out. But I still don't feel like I've fully figured it out. You know, it's very interesting, especially when you're trying to do something different. Yeah. I'm trying to do a line that is a full size range. So it incorporates two markets. It incorporates the straight size market and the plus size market, which kind of leaves me nowhere to be.
Right.
Because the, you know, the straight size market sees me as, oh, she's inclusive, which means she's plus size, which, by the way, inclusive sizing is not synonymous for plus size, but a lot of people think it is. And then the plus size market, you know, similar. So I find myself in this lane where I'm like, I don't belong anywhere. which that's a huge challenge. And I get a lot of, I've been for years, so many responses of, this is wonderful, this is great, it's, this is what's needed, the designs are great. But then those people aren't buying, or it's not being placed in the stores that I want. And so that's been a real challenge, is kind of figuring out, rather than belonging everywhere, which was the hope, it's almost as if I belong nowhere.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, I'm wondering, could you redefine the word and own that?
It's really challenging.
The word inclusive. Sorry.
To what, though?
I don't know.
It's remember when everything was green? Everything was green to the point where green meant nothing. And now we say sustainable, even though it's the same scheme.
Right. Mm.
And so now, you know, everybody's kind of seeing inclusive as the new PC way of saying plus size, which it's not. It's supposed to be inclusive. Right. And so what you're saying about trying to change the word, for years, I was really kind of drumming on that, we're inclusive sizing. And then when I realized that people just think that that's a nice way of saying plus, I've been really trying to pivot away and just say women's wear.
Right.
We do women's wear. And our new tagline is not plus, not minus, just women's wear. And the inclusivity part is a challenge, because just like the green movement, you know, anybody who recycled the paper cup was like, oh, we're green. Mm-hmm. If a new brand adds one or two more sizes, all of a sudden they're inclusive. But they're not really. You know, they're just jumping on that bandwagon of like, oh, see, we're inclusive. I remember an ad came out a few years ago for a brand. I'm not going to mention the brand because I don't roll that way. But their ad was a really beautiful dress on an average size woman. And the ad said, finally, now up to size 18, finally, like they're doing this huge favor. And the average size in America is 16, 18 for women. So I'm like, you just basically met the average and you're putting out this marketing as if you're the solution.
Well, that's what I'm saying to do. Redefine it. I don't know that it'd work.
Yeah.
Right? Anyway.
Yeah, but it's a challenge with wording. It's very, very challenging because everybody can do... I don't think plus size is a dirty word, but some people and a lot of marketers think that it is. So now you have a huge variety of options for extended sizing. You have extended sizing, you have inclusive, you have curve, you have, you know, whatever it is that it's just, it's missing the point. The point isn't to create a more PC packaging.
Right.
The point is offer the products to more women.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah.
So sizing actually segues nicely into the next question. I found it interesting to read on your site that there is no standardized sizing in the U.S. Does that cause any returns from, say, mistakenly ordered clothing, or how do you handle that?
Yes, it's a really big challenge. There is, from what I've noticed over the last, you know, few years, is that there's a basic guideline for the sizing. So even though it's not standardized, it's not going to be a difference of, you know, four or five sizes. You'll be up or down one or two. And I think that's really frustrating for consumers, because most of us don't measure ourselves every time we want to buy something. You know, most of us don't know what our actual measurements are. And so we go based on what we think we are, and we also go based on what our vanity will allow us to be. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's so much importance in the size tag that has been drilled into us. So if you tell a woman in store A that she's a 10, but then she goes to store B and you tell her she's a 12, that is an emotional, it's just, no one wants to hear that you're a bigger size, or the opposite. When you're a 12 in store A, you go to store B, you're a 10, you feel like you won the lottery. Like, oh yeah, oh my gosh, yes, now I'm a 10. But it's not. It's really cut the same exact size, pretty much. So most women probably, you know, they learn their sizes in different stores, but it makes it challenging to try new brands. One of the ways we've tried to tackle that is I offer a free fit kit, which I would send to anybody who requests. It's a card that shows you how to measure yourself. It comes with a branded measuring tape. And you can go home, measure yourself, and compare it to the size charts. The wonderful thing about shopping online is most brands will now have a size chart available. So if you do know your measurements and you're smart enough to figure that out before you shop online, then you can do that. But the truth is people buy, there's a few things that we see. One, people buy the size they think they are and then return. Or people buy multiple sizes and then return. You know, so there's a lot of returns, but I think we're in a point now in our culture where it's a big problem with returns. Like the fact that you can buy anything on Amazon, you can return it. And even if it's like a $5 thing, like as a business owner, I think about how can you ever know how much money you're actually making, how much product you're actually losing. And we just, I think as consumers, we don't even think past that. We just think of our own convenience, like, oh, I'll order it, I'll return it. Easy peasy.
Right.
And I'm guilty of that too. I'm not saying that, you know, I do it all the time. So that is a different issue that I think we really need to crack down on. And how do we limit that or stop that? Or, you know, I think,
Well, that question, it was prompted, actually. So I wear, you know, whatever size I wear, and it's very consistent. I went to another brand. I was looking at a suit, and the pant sizes that fit me from that brand were three sizes bigger. And I was like, how can that be? But now it makes sense. Why don't they come up with standardized sizing? Wouldn't that be easier for everybody? Wouldn't that eliminate waste and time?
You'd think so. But I think a big part of it is also to do with a big part of it is vanity sizing, right? So if, for example, pattern makers do have somewhat of a standardized sizing. So, you know, a 26-inch waist is size whatever, and that's kind of how pattern makers on the back end create it. But this started back when, you know, size 00 was the in thing. 00, that's not even a number. How can that be? So if you, you know, my great grandmother was a size 16, but in today's sizing, she would probably be a 10. And because it goes down and up, so to make you feel like you're smaller than you are, even though you're, it doesn't change your actual body. It literally just changes the little tag and I've been all kinds of sizes, and at my highest, I was really, really large, and it would make me feel bad seeing the tag. I'd come home, I'd cut that tag out and never think about it again. And I think that that's also been something that's been a driving force for me and my brand, is to try to eliminate that power that we, whether you're a size 4 wanting to be a 2 or whether you're a size 20 wanting to be an 18, we give so much power to this stupid little label whose only job is to help differentiate between products. So that when I have it on the rack, I know that this one is this and this one is this, and that's its only purpose. But we put so much importance and our own self-worth into this dumb little tab.
Yeah.
It's a problem.
Yeah.
So what are your primary channels for, first of all, making people aware of your brand, of your label, and then how do you transact most of your sales?
So I, before COVID, it was mainly social media, and I took a break for 2.5 years during COVID because Well, I just had a baby. And my goal was to, you know, go home, be with the baby for 6 weeks and then get back to work. And then COVID shut us down. Yay. Mm-hmm. And I noticed right away when COVID shut us down, like all the brands started panicking and sending out these ridiculous amount of emails of sales and this and that. And we're doing it. And I just thought, we don't know what's going on. Like so many people are dying. The world's in chaos. Like this is, I felt like that was so tone deaf and like, so I just shut everything down and I said, look, let's wait and see what happens in this, you know, to the world. Because nobody needs a designer dress when she's locked in her apartment for a year.
Unless it's on sale.
Unless it's on sale. No, I say that, but in the second year of going into the second year of COVID, I started buying a ton of handbags. And I wasn't going anywhere, but I think maybe subconsciously I was feeling like one day I'll leave the house again.
Yeah, yeah.
And
aspirational.
It was like, yeah. So that's something that I actually did. But so I shut it down. And then after having my second kid during COVID and things kind of calmed down, we started going out of the house and I just got so sick of wearing sweatpants that I said, all right, we're starting up again. And that's when I hooked up with Scott. And he's been on my team ever since and really pushing the PR and marketing strategies and all of that and producing my fashion shows. So the main objective of the first year and a half was really to build up the buzz again because I practically was starting from scratch.
Right, yeah.
Much smarter, much more educated, but definitely starting over. So really focused there on sales, not on sales, on PR and getting the name out there and showing consistency. Because unfortunately, a lot of buyers, they won't buy your first season or your second season. You know, they want to see that you have staying power.
I see.
And this is another place where having that privilege of the funds comes in. Because most designers, you can't survive two, three collections without any sales. It's really difficult. And so that's why a lot of them fizz out. And so I was lucky that I could, do another collection and do another collection and do some direct-to-consumer sales through the website and social media. But my big goal is breaking into the wholesale market and getting into boutiques and getting into specialty stores and, you know, and the department stores that are struggling, but there's still, you know, people who go and that's really my big goal for this year is to start breaking into that. But it's, challenging. So, you know, we're trying to fire on most cylinders right now, PR going. We've got, you know, I'm so glad to be on this podcast and we've got our social media is being more consistent than ever before. And the collections are getting better. And that's important too, is that it's that the collections have to be good. And sometimes it's really hard to, you know, to know if they're good, to, I think one of the things that Scott and I discussed about the first couple seasons is that people didn't talk about my collection at all. Like not good reviews or bad reviews. I don't think that the first one was super great because it was really focused on driving the point across that inclusive sizing is possible. So I focused more on that rather than the actual design. But all everybody ever talked about was the inclusivity, which is great. It's great for the change that I want to make, but no one's talking about the clothes.
Yeah.
No one's giving me feedback. This is good. This is not good. This last collection that I just showed in this month was great. It was great. I got a lot of positive feedback. You know, a lot of people commented about the progress they're seeing and how it's getting improving and getting better. So that's good to hear. But yeah, that is it. Now is the time where I'm juggling the three. I got the collection that I'm promoting that I just showed. I'm starting marketing sales for September's collection, and I got to start designing for next September. So it's a fun time.
Wow. Yeah, that's interesting. And so you've done two launches?
I've shown three collections so far.
Great. And you're planning this fall 24, but you're saying you're already thinking about fall 25.
Yeah,
I'm already starting
development for spring 25, which will be shown in September.
Wow.
And okay. I'm now on March 19th, the first day of June, I'll be starting the first day of spring. I'll be marketing the spring collection that I showed this past September and selling spring for this year.
Yeah. So the main awareness tool or the main like PR marketing thing is doing these releases, doing these shows and inviting press to them, influencers to them to help spread the word about.
Yeah. And the place in the market where I want to be,
right.
You know, in the luxury market. Yes. That is from what I have gauged, the best way to go about it is to really show, you know, be part of Fashion Week. That's mm-hmm. an important thing, mm-hmm. I think. And then to support it with the social media. Scott and I also did a trade show last September, which ended up being not the right fit, but I'm glad we did it because it was a really important experience. Yeah. Yes. And my goal now is to get into showrooms, to get into mm-hmm. showrooms who have those relationships with the wholesalers and who can get my collection into a broader market.
Do you work with any boutiques locally?
I have one boutique near me that mm-hmm. we are planning a trunk show. Okay. But other than that, not yet.
Yeah. Yeah. And so you said ideally you'd like to wholesale to larger retailers or boutique retailers.
Yeah, they don't have to be large. They can be small specialty boutiques as well. But I do want to get into brick and mortar places where women are shopping. And, you know, and again, that's so challenging because so many of these specialty stores, they have a very specific client. So, you know, boutique A might only carry up till size 12, which boutique A, that's ridiculous. But that's their customers, and they would have to put in a lot of work to train their audiences and to build an audience for the bigger sizes. It's like I said, it's hard to find where exactly I belong, and I think the strategy is going to have to be to on a sales point is split the collection and try to sell half of it, the smaller sizes one way and the plus sizes the other way, which is frustrating because it kind of defeats the purpose, but you know, I can't have it exactly the way I want when the market's not ready for it. And so hopefully we can start, I'm hoping that let's say I go to boutique A mm-hmm. who only carries up to 12 and say to them, you know, carry it to 12, I'll give you 14 and 16 and see if they sell. Yeah. See if someone will come in and maybe you can extend your sizing. Mm-hmm. Because there are women. My collection is inclusive in sizing. It's exclusive in price point. It is. Yeah. You know, you can't give everything to everybody. But there are plenty of women who can afford it and who want it and who can spend the money and but they're just not the right size.
Right.
That's ridiculous. Why not cater to them?
And I'm wondering how much space and money at these boutiques, because I mean, there's not limited space. There's limited space. There's limited money.
Yeah.
And to have a bunch more SKUs with different sizes. But I think your solution to put it in on consignment, kind of the exercises, maybe anything above 16, that might be the way to crack that.
Yeah. And I'm happy to do that because I know women shop together too, right?
Yeah,
you know,
right.
I have three slim sisters. And so shopping with them is always, that's part of what drove me also to this brand is to into this model.
Sure.
Is because shopping with my sisters was a nightmare, you know, especially when we were young. We'd go to the cool stores and they get to go and buy all the cute, you know, trendy stuff. And I would go directly to the accessories wall and say, okay, what can I do with this? And it was disheartening and it sucked. And then when it was my turn to shop at some, like, you know, math teacher grandma store and find something that would work, like, it was a bummer. And they would be impatient. Oh, we're done. We don't want to. I want to create a situation where shopping is fun again and joyful. Like, between clicking online, ordering everything from your phone, or knowing, not even going to a store because you know they won't have anything for you, the whole feeling sucks.
Yeah.
You know, shopping is a necessity, but it's more than that. It's an activity.
Yeah.
It's a, you know, a fun thing that we do. And should be fun for everyone.
Well, you're offering a great service. You really are.
Thank you. Thanks. Yeah.
Are there wholesalers that specialize in selling to boutiques? You know what I mean? Like I'm sure, like, there's wholesalers that specialize in selling,
like,
to
sales reps,
Macy's.
Mean?
Yeah, maybe. I guess I don't really even know the right question to ask, but, like, wholesaler. When I think of wholesalers, it's, you know, they have existing relationships with retailers usually. So I'm wondering, are there specific wholesalers that specialize in relationships with, you know, small boutiques, maybe throughout the U.S. or whatever?
Definitely there are. There are sales reps that have those relationships with the small boutiques or even bigger stores, chain stores. You know, they all kind of have something that they specialize in. And that's another problem, is finding that one salesperson who can do the full size range. It would need to be, you know, oh, this person or this showroom can sell this range, and find someone can sell this range. But the second option, you know, for the bigger sizes is fewer and far in between, because plus size luxury is new. You know, only in the last 5-6 years has there really been options in plus size luxury. So it's a matter of convincing, I think, the boutiques, the specialty boutiques, even the department stores, to convincing them that there is a market for this.
Yeah.
There are more and more women are on the larger size, with money. They want to shop. Yeah. Also, speaking as a plus size consumer myself, plus size women tend to return less. Because if they find something that they love and fits well, I'm talking about me. If I find something that I love and fit well, I buy it, and I'll buy it in every color.
Yeah.
And I'll keep coming back to buy it because I know it's, like, a safe item. This is my pant. It fits me. I love it. Oh, they have a new color. I'm going to get it. And so there's a lot of loyalty, I think, that can be developed in that market. And it's a shame that it's still kind of seen as a subcategory or a, you know, like when I started school and I said I didn't want to be pigeonholed as a plus size designer, because at the time you were a plus size designer. You could not shed that title. Like, if that's what you chose to do, that's what you were known for. And you couldn't really do much else because you were a plus size designer, which almost made it feel like you were less creative or less of a talent or less of a designer because of it. You know, just like,
Sure.
So do you include that information, that stat about the customer segment of plus size women not returning as much?
Well, I don't actually have hard evidence of that. That's just from my personal experience as a consumer myself, and from you know, the people I know in the plus size community. And but it's not. I don't know. Like.
No, I get you. Yeah.
Yeah.
We don't know. Obviously, you can tell from the screen. We don't know fashion. And we're learning a lot on this, so this is all new to us.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening. If you like this podcast, please subscribe. Visit artsentrepreneurshippodcast.com to learn more about our guest and how you can help support artists, the arts, and this podcast.